Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine Podcast, episode 177. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, as he always is because it's his podcast, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
Look at us doing 2 weeks in a row.
Man, you can feel the engine and the tires turning. It's coming back again.
You can smell the professionalism. Just
before it sputters out in a summer of travel and whatnot.
Oh man, that is that. I haven't even thought about that yet because I'm going to Europe for a couple of weeks. I imagine you've got some travel. There's the Death March.
Yeah, I got a couple of, well, yeah, there's that. I got a couple of TV festivals.
Yeah.
And I have the junior year daughter looking for school campus visits. So,
oh yeah. Well, I've got that too. You and I have that in common. You're going to be at the ATX festival in Austin, Texas. Is that next weekend?
That is, I'll be there next, Wednesday. Yeah. So basically, yeah, we won't have a podcast next week.
No podcast next week. I'll be in San Jose, California, beautiful scenic San Jose, California, for the Apple Developer Conference. So perfect timing. So now that we're here every week for two straight weeks, we got to skip a week. So we're going to skip next week and then back. But we will try to alert you, dear listeners, about when we are skipping and when we are not skipping.
Yes, ahead of time for the summer. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll try to do that in advance. We do so little planning in advance, but we'll try to do that. gonna miss a couple of weeks in there though. Oh my god.
By the way, for the old time listeners, I saw Joe Garofoli in the hardware store the other day, and we had such a good laugh about like the original TVTM.
Oh man.
And kind of like ahead of its time and really kind of creative and inventive, but totally insane. It was a fun time.
Yeah, that was the learning lessons about this new medium, and and you created something that was wonderful and that I loved it. And I can also see why everybody responsible wanted to walk away from it and not really admit that it existed, because it, like, in terms of advancing the professional ambitions and obligations of the participants and the company it was linked to, no, not so much.
Not so much.
Not.
It was.
Not.
But
so
I
much.
Gave him grief because Joe Garofoli, who's a political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Peter Hartlob, who is their pop culture guy and does a bunch of things. He's actually doing some Benny Evangelista producing on the Knobs, apparently, also for the podcast. I said, hey, congratulations to you two on this. What is this new thing? This newfangled idea you guys are doing over there called podcasts?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, boy. Joe's got one, Peter Hartlob's got one. Yeah, it's back. Chronicle podcasts are back.
But yeah, I welcomed them back to 2007.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. we have, by the way, I'm going to save it for later, but we have a letter from one of the most original of OG TVTM characters, participants, names. It will be amazing when we get there. I don't want to overhype it, but I was amazed. My jaw dropped when I saw who it was from. But we're going to start with the finale, the series finale of The Americans. Now, we're going to be gentle here because I know a lot of you haven't seen it. Also, I haven't seen it because I'm several seasons behind. So, but what can we say? You and Dan talked about it. People can read that if they have also joined you at the end of the storyline. Sounds like you were pretty happy with it.
Yeah, everybody dies.
What?
Wasn't that great? I'm just kidding.
All right,
that's my joke for every spoiler of every finale.
Yeah, that's
season.
Like, well, that's how it happens at the end of MASH. Everybody dies.
Everybody dies. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody because it's especially for me in this series, I just love it too much, and there is too much tied up in mysteries and things like that. If you have seen it, definitely go or please go read the conversation that Dan and I had back and forth. There was I would just say it's a beautiful finale. It was everything that I had hoped for in a series finale, and I think my expectations of series finales in 2018 are slightly different just a little bit different than they were sort of in the Sopranos and Mad Men era. In that I think that it's a gift when someone is willing in the peak TV era to follow your series, low rated series, and complicated, demanding series for 6 seasons. And so you kind of owe them something. I don't think you have to owe them like, you know, closure on every single character that was ever invented for any series, but I think you owe them special care. And I think that's what happened with the Americans. Dan and I went off on it again, no spoilers. Dan and I went off on it. And there were some moments, just like I just didn't expect them. There were some really emotional moments. There were some beautiful filming, and some things that they tried, that I thought that they pulled off. There was great music. There were montages where, I mean, I timed some montages where they had gone, I believe, 7 minutes and 7 or 8 minutes without saying anything. And then there was a brief line, and then they went another, I think, 9 minutes without saying anything. That's just unheard of in television. So it was just really beautiful. And as a fan of the Americans, absolutely 100% satisfied. I couldn't be happier. And I'll be interviewing the cast when I'm in ATX next week.
Great. That sounds great. I look forward to experiencing this amazing finale in 2020 or whenever I get to
it. You'll get there. And you know what? I would say this to anybody who's either has not started it or is somewhere in the first or second season or third or whatever it is. Absolutely keep going. Every season is rewarding. And, you know, I even thought that the bridge season, which was getting them to this last year, was absolutely meaningful in setting up all the payoff for the end. And it's worth it. Stick with it. It's one of the few handful of shows. I mean, I think that the Americans is going to go down in the TV history as easily a top 10 drama of all time. Easily. So it's just a matter of where you want to put it.
Right. And I know because we've heard from some of these people, I know there are people out there who are reluctant to start something when they don't know that there's an ending. And sometimes even they don't know that there's a good ending. So for those people, this might be the impetus to get them to watch The Americans, which, you know, most of the seasons are on Amazon, I believe. The graveyard where shows go to die, apparently, we learned last week. And so you could just give it a watch starting there, knowing now that it has an ending and a satisfying ending. And so it's the whole novel has been written now. And I know for some people that's a great reassurance when they're gonna go back and dip into the archive and watch a whole show. So there it is, job done. Yeah.
And if you needed any motivation, I would say that the one thing that the finale did for me was I know my favorite four dramas of all time. So uh-huh. Not just talking the top 10. I mean, I've never filled out a top 10 list of best TV dramas of all time. But I definitely know that if I'm considering five, I know the four that are already in it. And the fifth, to me, there's a couple of contenders. The fifth has always kind of been The Shield. But I'm going to say right now that the Americans is very firmly in the top five now. So the top five is sealed off. And if that's, you know, if that little Mount Rushmore thing is an impetus for you to go start watching The Americans, then go do it.
We should talk about your top five all time sometime.
Yes, we can do that.
Sometime. But not now. Not now. We have to move on to another list of power rankings, namely the TV comedies power rankings, which have returned.
They have returned. Shockingly overdue. I was a little surprised how long it was before I had done these before, but every time that their turn came up in the rotation, I was so smitten with new dramas that I kept pushing at the snooze button, but it was time to get them back, and they are back with a vengeance.
Yeah, so you got Atlanta at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
You got to have that. I mean, this season was phenomenal, I think, on all levels. I think they're just doing whatever they want on Atlanta, just like they did last year. And it's I taught this show to my students, and when they were trying to grasp, like, what is it? Like, what is it? It's a comedy, but what's more than that? And I said, just think of it as like they gave a really creative person carte blanche to put whatever he wanted onto the screen, and he's taking them up on it. That's basically it.
Yeah. A show that you keep recommending to people because nobody's ever heard of it, which is Back, starring Mitchell and Webb, of course, yeah. Ranked high on your list. And so you know, you're going to go with it and you put it second.
I put it second. It's strong. Go find it. I said a lot of people don't have Sundance. You got to check it out. I think it's so rewarding. And again, I just quickly will circle back to my thing about that show is that it actually works not just as a setup punchline. It works as a story. And the jokes are, you get to develop characters, and there's a little more narrative there, and that helps the story.
Now, I was surprised to see Barry on HBO at number 3, but it really did make that great an impression on you.
It really did, and I think it was, as I said in the preamble to the piece, as you're reading it, is that I also had it on my drama list, because the show is clearly playing in both fields. It shouldn't work that way. I don't know why it does work, but it works on both fields. And the funny parts are hilariously funny. So there you go.
I like it. The end of the FXXXing world comes in at number 4. A beautiful little simple short. We've talked about it here before. Just a great short, fun series. Never waits, never lingers, always moving forward. Kind of like a movie chopped up into little pieces, but it's great. I'm with you. Makes sense.
And the only thing that I would point out there is that I am more committed than ever in saying that I think this is a masterclass in, and it'll remain that way, because I can't imagine anybody getting close to this in what you can achieve if in 20 minutes or less.
Yeah.
20 minutes or less on these episodes.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like that speed, that size too, that length. I thought it was quite nice to have them be little short bits.
And I don't think it'd be really hard for anybody else to pull it off. I think everybody else needs the other 10 minutes to actually flesh out storylines. So whatever they did shorthand wise was brilliant.
Yeah. Got Veep, just last eligibility period for Veep.
Yeah. And still it gets its next season, and then there's a delay on that. But next and last season, of course,
right.
Look, what can you say? And I said on this, and you can just turn the volume. I mean, you can just turn the TV off and listen to the volume and laugh. That's what makes a great series.
Better Things. I'm not surprised by this. Number 1 last time slipped a little bit, but still, that's that show that you keep talking about that, as you say, a lot of people just haven't seen it.
Yeah, they'll get to it. A lot of people have seen the first season, not the second. So it's patience. I have patience for them.
People of Earth, I know you beat the drum on that one. Here it is again, remaining on your list. TBS. Maybe people just aren't looking for funny sitcoms on TBS, but there it is.
You know what? And that's the thing too. A reason it merits it because it's been on my list my comedy list every time it's been eligible. So it was really nice to actually get it back on the list this time, because for those people who aren't familiar with what's going on, People of Earth was greenlit for a third season. The ratings are actually really good for this show. It was greenlit for a third season. The entire third season is actually written, and then TBS balked a little bit. This is a little inside baseball. Behind the scenes stuff has not been written about very much. It might have something to do with a pending gigantic merger among multinational companies.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe this is, you know, a tit for tat that it's not getting done. Who knows? Because it's a pretty highly rated series for TBS, and it's ready to go. All they need to do is have some executives say, oh, hi, Kevin Riley. You need executives to go ahead and start filming it. Just film it and let's get it on. So they haven't done that yet. So a little worrisome.
Yeah, that's not good.
Mm-mm.
Not good. You're the Worst is on here. Bravo, of course.
Bravo, yeah. And then heading out next season with this last one, just like Veep. A lot of stuff falling off the radar next year, we keep forgetting. A lot of tears next year.
Yeah, it's going to be sad. Arrested Development cracked your list down here, number 9.
Yeah, and it's so if you haven't seen it, it's been on for a couple of days. I would just reiterate, be careful of the first 2 episodes, because they've got to carry all that baggage from season 4 or 5 years ago. But really kicks off, especially gets better in the third episode. Episode 4, 5, 6 are amazing.
Have you, did the 8th episode, the mysterious 8th episode that you didn't get to see, did that deliver too?
Well, no, because I was so busy doing other things, and then it dropped on the 29th, so it's all available now. Like, if I need to go out and finish it, I will.
Oh, but you just haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it.
It's all to play for. It's all to play for out there. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Also on the list, Silicon Valley. Not surprising.
Not surprising. Didn't do enough on that one this year. Again, this a lot of familiar names on this list because of the idea of the power rankings where your last episode has it, as long as it was aired within a year of the current posting of this list, it's eligible. So Veep about to fall off because of that, but Silicon Valley getting a little close. But yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It's such a good series. I didn't write enough about it because it's fifth season or sixth season.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
The next one on your list is American Vandal, and I know they're going to be both on your list. I should say it's been on both times. People are going to be like, really, American Vandal, the show about the guy who drew the dicks in the parking lot. And I remember when we were talking about that, and I went and watched it, and I realized it was great. So for those who are going to complain about American Vandal and the fact that we talk about it and then it's on the list, who are skeptical, I will just call it Peabody Award winning American Vandal. Not kidding. Yeah. Won a Peabody Award.
It won a Peabody Award.
People, amazing.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm doing this thing called Hidden Gems, and I there'll be some debate whether things are hidden or not. At this point, I'm beginning to think that American Vandal for a lot of people is a hidden show.
I think people, I think because of what it is, because it's a faux documentary about high school kids, and it is Who Drew the Dicks, and all of that stuff is in there, that people are like, you know, it's not for me, it's reality show or true crime parody or whatever, and they, for some reason, it turns people off who think this is not the genre for them. And it's like, how many ways can we say that it's good, and now it's won a Peabody Award? I mean, for Pete's sake.
It's so smart. It's so smart in its dumbness that it's genius.
No, that's exactly right. The Tick, which you which made the list, and both of your lists, it's still on, it maintained, and you just say you need silly. We all need silly, and it is. It's funny and sweet and silly.
And they dropped that second half of the season. And it came back. You know, I mean, obviously it was all shot together, so it was so there wasn't like any a continuity issue. I think it's finding even more of its rhythm. And I would love to see it stick around. I think it's a really fun series.
You snuck in a tie. You could not split them apart. Bob's Burgers and Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, and I had just written about them because I did a thing that we talked about, like best written shows. They were both on that too, and they've both been on this list every time it's on. And I joked that like I think I'm really going to have to drop these guys off as far as like just kind of a Hall of Fame consideration for some of these shows, because especially in the network arena where you have to write so many of these shows year after year, which means you have to not only have a strong writing cast, but when you turn your writing cast over, which is very frequent in the business, you have to get even more good people. And so sustainability is very difficult of network television. And here you have two amazingly funny series. And I'm so happy that Brooklyn Nine-Nine was resurrected and will now be on NBC after leaving Fox for like what, less than 24 hours. And both of them are great. I think you can, and as I said, one of the highest praises I can give any show is that, especially as we're drowning in all this stuff, and now I have this new feature trying to go back and find gems that I've missed, which is a lot of things and international shows. The highest praise is to say, hey, I went back to your show that's been on the air for 149 episodes or whatever, and I watched a couple of reruns. That's true love.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, I was surprised to see on the list. I guess this is your point, is that just when you think that it's probably over, you keep coming back to it.
I really liked this last season, and it didn't generate as much buzz, I think, because it was off for so long. And it's not a one-trick pony, but the shtick is very much the shtick. And if you don't like that wince-inducing comedy, and even if you do, at a certain point, how many difficult situations can Larry Sanders get himself into? I mean, Larry Sanders, that's a different show.
Yeah.
But how many situations can he get in? So it could be tiring for some people, especially when there's bright, new, shiny things out there to fall in love with. So, but, you know, the quality's there. It made the list.
Okay, this is a good one. Loudermilk. Is this a show that people are even aware of? It's on the Audience Network, which used to be the DirecTV place where it put things where I don't even know how to describe what that show was, so, or what that channel was. Another hard to find show, but it makes the list.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's funny, and I noticed that as I saw it online, I laughed at, and I'm sure these are not by accident the placements for, because, you know, Mr. Mercedes, a drama I really loved, is also on the Audience Network, and it's up for some Emmy considerations. We're in that FYC territory for your consideration. And, you know, this is the comedy version of what they're putting out on AT&T Audience Network. It's a terrible, terrible title for a channel. I understand that. But this was a surprisingly good show, and I know that a lot of people are not going to get to it, and even when they get to it, it's going to seem kind of a weird, curmudgeonly little show, but I think it was one of my, not like my favorite discoveries, so that would be like something like Back or whatever, but Lauterbach was like, wow, hey, this is a lot better than anybody would have expected it to be on the Audience Network, and it's better than, I think, if it would have showed up on, like, let's just say they put it on FX, I think it would have got a lot more critical acclaim. It's just that it's hard to find.
Let's rounding out the list. You got Smilf on Showtime, which I'm slowly making my way through, but it's great.
It's great, and it's more than this. It's more than it looks, and then you discover that as you go through.
Yeah,
great performances all the way around.
Yeah, Insecure on HBO, another good one. People might miss.
Yeah, and I brought up the point again here that, like, thank God that we have a year-long open windows for consideration, because Insecure just gets lost. There's nothing like it on TV. And if speaking from that perspective, that black female perspective, and it's really funny. So hopefully people will find it.
Yeah, my wife likes that one an awful lot.
Yeah.
And The Good Place rounds out the list, which I'm right there with you. Not a lot of, I guess it's a comedy. That's about all the broadcast stuff that you're watching now. So, but it's great. It's a legitimately brilliant TV show.
Yeah, it's, I have three broadcast comedies here, because they're still doing really good stuff. But do you find, because you're a fan of the show, do you find that, like, when you talk to people about it, they're like, what? What's The Good Place?
Yeah, no, it's for something that's on a network, right? Like, people miss it, and I think some people are missing it because it's on a network. I think if it were on HBO or something like that, people might be more into it. But it is going to go down. I think The Good Place is going to go down in history as one of the greats. I'm going to call it now. I think it is. I don't know how long they're going to keep doing it. I like that they're doing the short runs. The first two seasons were both really brilliant, and are also, and this is ties into a letter we're going to get to in a little bit, I think rewatchable on a level, because as you watch them, you pick up more details. It's very funny. There are lots and lots of jokes, but there's also, it's like a comedy plotted like a drama, which there are. Yeah. It's not the only example of that, but boy, it is so satisfying to have a legitimately funny comedy that takes its storyline dead seriously, like, mm-hmm. and to do those together, I mean, it's a little bit like what you're talking about with Barry, where it's like to do both, like, that's really hard to be both, and The Good Place isn't dramatic in that sense. It is a joke factory, but it's got wacky jokes, it's got character jokes, and it's got a plot that is always driving forward in a scenario that you would think, like, no, this show is just going to be kind of airy and pointless and sort of about the same thing every time. And it's totally not. And everybody, you know, the characters progress, the story progresses. It's kind of an amazing trick. I can't believe it when I watch it, just how good it is.
Yeah. And just for people who want to catch up, the first season's on Netflix right now. The second season is not. But probably will be by the time you finish the thing. And there's something about the window. People kind of want you to watch it on reruns on, I guess, NBC.com with all the ads on it. So I would just watch the Netflix version and then come back later.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Great stuff. All right. We should. Oh, before we move on, I'm going to Columbo myself, I guess. Before we move on, a couple of notes I wanted to mention. One of your favorite TV shows, The Golden State Warriors, got renewed at the last moment for an unlikely final set of episodes. So that's continuing. Who knew?
Yes, that was thrilling.
And the premiere of the new season of The Warriors had, I think, kind of an unbelievable ending. Like, the ending seemed a little bit much to me that it would have gone that way. But, you know.
It's, I think they're in the this is their fourth season in as the highest rated drama on television. Yeah. And I think they had to have a couple of twists in there to make it interesting. Yeah,
I think they're running out of ideas. If they're going to go like having somebody forget the score, that seems unlikely that, a professional basketball player would forget a story. Anyway, and since we talked about it here, I will mention The Expanse did get saved by Amazon, which has the streaming video rights in the U.S., and they picked it up. So there will be more outer space stuff on The Expanse, which still is airing. They still have two more episodes, I think, in this season to air on the Sci-Fi Channel. And I think it just keeps getting better this season. It's kind of funny. Everybody's eye is kind of on being renewed and coming back to Amazon next time. But the current season is still airing on Sci-Fi and is actually quite good. They had they finished their adaptation of the second book in the series and moved on to the third. So they kind of have a mid-season. It feels almost like a new season premiere. It's funny how that show is structured because the seasons have a structure, but the books also have a structure. It's a little bit strange, but it's getting weird and getting good, even better than it was before. So anyway, talked about
right?
it. Because that was the question, is like were the rights going to kill it, because Universal and Sci-Fi didn't have rights beyond the linear TV rights, and that wasn't enough for their business model. Now perhaps they thought differently a few years ago when they went into the deal, but it didn't work out for them. So Jeff Bezos zoomed in on his rocket ship and saved The Expanse. Mm-hmm. Like literally, there was
his
space
rocket ship is made of like a checkbook.
Yeah, well, it's true. Well, he buys the rocket ship, and he does actually have rockets. He has a whole space company. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos has a space company. They were actually at a space conference somewhere, and somebody asked him, and it was totally a setup, if The Expanse was going to be saved, and he said, "Yes, it is saved." And then a whole bunch of people, like two rows back in the audience, stood up and started to cheer, and it was the cast of The Expanse because it was totally a setup. Anyway. Yeah. That's pretty fun. You want to do some letters?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So Peter wrote in on Twitter to say, how much of an advantage for Brooklyn Nine-Nine's continuance is the fact that the network gap was only about 24 hours compared to a few months where the cast might have signed new deals elsewhere? Now, my understanding is that there's a date on everybody's contracts where they have to either be renewed for another season or they're released. And so I'm not sure unless the date was exactly that 24-hour window when it got dropped by Fox and picked up by NBC. More likely it's just that there was a date June 1st. Who knows what it was? Every show is different. But my understanding is there is literally a date that the production company needs to either officially pick up everybody and say, we're going to pay you for another season, or has to let it go. And so, you know, it's not necessarily like the moment they say it's canceled. My understanding is contractually, like, it's not like the cast can walk away, because if somebody else picks them up and they before the contract expires, then they're contractually obligated to do more show.
Yeah, that's true. And the actual date is I don't think it's as close as people think it is, because sometimes decisions get held over because they're not going to be in fall. Maybe they're saying, you know, we want to think a little bit more about our mid-season plans, but it's not like it's September or something. You have to, it's either June or somewhere probably in the June window.
Yeah, it's when they expect to have a renewal notice, and there is a point where they can't let it go because they will leave those people hung out to dry, and that's why they negotiate that time. My understanding also is occasionally they will go to the actors and producers and everybody, and they'll negotiate like an extension, saying we need to wait another couple of weeks. Are you okay with that? And they'll get everybody to be okay with that, and then that gives them a little more time to save it, and sometimes that happens, but that's generally how it works. And so if they took another job, this show would still be in, I think, you know, they would say first position. Usually hear that for things where there's like different pilots that people are in, but the idea is basically like, I can audition for other stuff, but if they renew this show, I gotta do it. Like, I can't not do it. I mean, you could ask to be let out of your contract, but you know, this is the case. Also, with these shorter seasons, I wonder if there is as much conflict as there used to be, because you could literally be on several shows, and some people are, because, you know, when you're shooting 10 episodes a year, it's not the same as shooting 22. But anyway, there's a date basically, and that's the date to Peter's question that the contracts, you either commit to another year or you say you're free, and then that's it. Then it's almost impossible to get the show back because they have to go back and sign everybody to a new deal, which is that's the drop dead date. There's also like things that are ancillary, like sets and all of that. My understanding is like the Expanse, they were starting to fold up the sets, and then they finally got close enough in the deal that they're like, no, keep the sets up, because that's expensive too. You got to pay somebody to tear the sets down. You want to keep the sets, but to fold the sets costs money. To hold them for future use costs money. If you're gonna, you want to keep them on the soundstage, like all of that stuff it must be an interesting job being one of those kind of producers where they're a producer for a TV show, but it's really on the money side. That would be a fascinating job that I'm glad I don't have. Mm-hmm. Okay. Listener Jessica, or is it listener Jessica Lauren? I don't know. She's got two names before her last name. Anyway, she says, I'm super excited about the new series Disenchantment because I always loved Futurama. I even named my dogs after Leela and Fry. Have you heard anything yet? Love to your mothers. Oh, it's Design Geek Jess is who Jessica Lauren is. Formerly the 617, the 415, now the 206. So many area codes, Design Geek Jess. Disenchantment's the new Matt Groening show on Netflix.
Yeah, I actually know nothing about it. I didn't even know she moved. She's moved again.
I know.
What is wrong? She just cannot settle down.
She can't.
That's the problem. Or she's gone to someplace where there's better design.
Well, maybe. She's gone to Seattle from the Bay Area, apparently.
That's nice. Yeah. Certainly.
Congratulations on the move. I've only heard, I think, what she's probably heard, which is Netflix made an announcement that they're doing a show with Matt Groening about a fantasy setting with lots of ways where the fantasy gets undermined by they're undermining all the fantasy tropes and all of that. And they're doing, I think it's two seasons of 10 episodes or something like that for Matt Groening on Netflix. So that'll be the next Matt Groening show will be a Netflix show, but I think that's all we know. And it takes so long to do animation, right? It'll probably be like a year, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And as a rule of thumb for me, as I've said this before, it's like, I don't pay attention until it's right in front of me.
Yep. Tell me when you got the screener link.
Tell me when I've got to watch it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
listener Socrates in Australia wrote in with a little extra information. We mentioned last week that Arrested Development can't run on Netflix in Australia because it's got this deal with Foxtel, which is a cable channel. Mm-hmm. According to Socrates, what happens is Foxtel showed all 8 episodes of the new season in a row at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday, and then they dropped it on Netflix. So there must be some very weird contractual obligations going on there.
Interesting.
That they had to air it first, and then they could show it on Netflix. So thanks for the interesting... Australia is such a confusing place. I'm so confused by it.
I would be stunned if there wasn't a certain amount of cash that went from Netflix to Foxtel.
Yeah, like a payoff. Like just show it, and we'll walk, and then let us... Put it on our air.
There's a cake with something inside.
Or even just like, just show it. Just show it and walk away. Please just show it and walk away.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. We got some letters. This is an amazing one. This is from Teacher Tim in the Five and Dime.
Wow.
The official
archivist
of the TV Talk Machine.
Yeah.
From the old days. He says, I just finished reading Tim's TV Comedies Power Rankings. There's great stuff in there. I noticed that Brockmire was missing. Have either of you had a chance to watch it? It's about baseball, podcasting, alcohol, sex, and filthy humor. And if 10 plus years of listening to the TVTM has taught me anything besides the word quotidian, it's that these topics are right up your alley. Hope all is well. Now back to the archives. Teacher Tim in the Five and Dime. Well, yes.
That's brilliant.
Amazing.
Thank you. You know, Tim's still down in the archives trying to make sense of how to label all those.
All the different the different volumes, the different iterations of the TV Talk Machine.
Yeah. And who said what, when, what. Yeah. There's a lot down there.
But
I have not seen Brockmire. It's on my to-do list. I do put a little caveat in there that, like, I didn't see Corporate, which some people like on Comedy Central. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the second season of Dear White People on Netflix, but I liked the first season. And Brockmire, again, another one of those ones I just haven't. And even shows I like Teachers, I fell behind on. So some of them don't make the list because I haven't got to them yet.
So that's the simple answer, and I haven't seen it either. The simple answer is haven't seen it. I know. Sorry, Teacher Tim.
I know. I hate it that it's that simple.
It, look, I got to say, I have seen some of the promos for it, and the promos did not serve it well. It's interesting to hear from somebody who likes it, because I saw the promos and thought, ooh, I don't want to see that show. And then I saw the promos for the second season, and I thought, what? That show got a second season? I still don't want to see it. So I'm fascinated by the fact that Teacher Tim actually seems to like it.
I know, and a lot of people like it, which is interesting. So, yeah.
I had no idea. Anyway, thank you for writing in our archivist once and forever, Teacher Tim.
Yes.
I think technically indeed. This is volume 4 of the TV Talk Machine, by the way. Technically. I've only been involved with volume 2 and 4. There was volume 3, which was a little bit weird, and volume 1 is just, ugh, yeah.
Again, I don't think we want to speak of volume 3. I don't remember that one.
I don't really know.
Was that just me?
I think that was you doing it by yourself.
Wow. Yeah, but the editing on that is pretty impressive.
Yeah. There were 7 of those, 7 episodes.
Oh, yeah. A lot of dedication.
It wouldn't surprise me. And then there's Almod Khans, which is in the TV Talk Machine cinematic universe, but is not part of the.
It's in the Senate. They had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Just needed a lot of work. I needed a full-time producer who was paid.
Yeah, that's hard with podcasting to do that. All right, Micah in the 415 wrote in and said, have either of you caught Showtime's The Fourth Estate docuseries on the New York Times? THR did a review of episode 1's debut at the Tribeca Film Festival. All 4 parts are available now. I've never been more impressed by a Showtime offering. I only wish it had a more popular digital home. Like previous discussions on The Expanse, there seems to be a cultural irrelevancy that Showtime and Amazon share, it's the graveyard argument here, in comparison to their larger competitors, HBO and Netflix. The series provides an invaluable look at news coverage production in the Trump era. I'm disheartened to think of how many people will never end up seeing it because of its Showtime home. Micah in the 415.
Micah, strong words. Although I agree, I think that if I had to choose which one I would watch before, I would watch Amazon without even a hesitation over Showtime. Showtime just does not make a lot of shows that I'm interested in, and they also are a little long in the tooth. They have their approach to curating their stuff is very network like.
Surprising since they're run by CBS, right?
No, yes, CBS. But you know, it's funny because it's like, yeah, but they're smart people, but they do it in kind of an old fashioned way, and. But I do like Smilf. And
People like Billions.
I just never really caught on for me. And then it got better. But by then, you know, again, that's my argument is like, well, you know, you told me it got better at the third quarter of the first season. I'm on to 10 other things at that point. So I haven't come around to that. But no, as far as this documentary, I heard a lot about it. I saw our review of it. But right now, to save face for Showtime a little bit, they do actually excellent music documentaries. So their documentary business is pretty strong over at Showtime. But I haven't personally watched it just because I haven't had time to watch any non-scripted stuff. None of it.
Also, Ray Donovan's still on the air over.
Well, of course it is. Yeah, I mean it'll be another 7 years.
Yeah. That. Mm-hmm. All right. Here is one from. David in the +353 Ireland.
Oh, Ireland. Love to your mothers in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. He said, I'm writing this on the evening ABC announced they're canceling Roseanne. We were always going to end up here, right? I just wanted to acknowledge the ending of The Middle, though, as in my opinion, it was the best all-around family comedy on TV. The think pieces around Roseanne's revival at the time intimated it was a play to or representative of viewers' economic anxiety. I think The Middle has been doing that for 9 years in a more heartfelt, kinder, and funnier way. As I watched the finale, I thought of the season's of enjoyment it provided, thought of everyone I had to convince to watch it who actually ended up loving it, thought about how it was a better comedy than Modern Family, its network sister, thought about how I was able to identify with the struggling parents, the introverted father, the hardworking mother, the siblings, and other minor characters that made up each episode. It was an underrated, unappreciated treat on a weekly basis, and I will really miss it.
David, I couldn't Ireland. Have said that better myself. That it was, The Middle was... You know, the legacy will be that it was always one of the most underwatched and underappreciated series comedies it just happened to be surrounded by comedies that were getting a lot more attention.
Right.
But I do love the Roseanne comparisons that he's making, because, you know, I've always thought that a Roseanne thing, it was based on nostalgia and in Trumpism. And it was a very devious play for that on both sides, the nostalgia side and the Trump side. And ABC got burned. I think Dan did a good job of pointing out that, like, before you stand up and applaud ABC canceling the show, remember that ABC was all too willing to get in bed with Roseanne, and they knew exactly what they were doing when they got in bed with her. So, you know, they can get off the cross. They're not martyrs, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, the middle, I think, is a much better example of kind of, the middle class in America. And it's also funnier and it's just smarter. Yeah, I would, you know, that's a much better show.
Good job, David. Thank you for citing it. It's hard. Some of these shows that go on, especially network shows that go on for a very long time, it is easy to miss them, to lose track of them. And so good to bring it up again here as it's wrapping up its last season.
Yeah.
All right, one letter left, and it's from Art from the 425, who writes in, "Here is a silly topic for when it's silly topic time. Art, it's time." In the before times of limited content and constrained availability, we saw the rise of syndicated reruns to fill in all the dead space. A strange outcome of this was that a handful of shows that became almost cult-like in terms of the audience behavior to rewatch episodes to frightening levels. Think Star Trek, Friends, Seinfeld, and others. In this age of too much TV, there is enough new content and unconstrained availability that you never really have to watch a show more than once if you don't want to. That's my question. Is the cult of the infinitely rewatchable show over? On the one hand, we were clearly manipulated by circumstance. On the other hand, a lot of people are proud of their detailed knowledge of Star Trek minutiae and legendary Seinfeld bits. Will the platinum age of TV produce a show that organically captures this behavior, or was it more just a manufactured circumstance that will go down in the history books as a quaint anomaly in our TV viewing history? Art in the 425.
Wow. So that's Art?
Art.
Art. Let me ask you, through the interwebs, Art, I would love to turn that question into a full-blown column.
Ooh.
So the Art's idea. And the reason I think that it would be worth that is because, yeah, I think that he's right. I think that very few series now are... I mean, we mentioned two earlier, right? We mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine and, you know, and Bob's Burgers. I would watch those in reruns no matter what happens. I think that people will watch The Simpsons, and they'll watch, some people watch Family Guy, and other people will certainly watch South Park, in reruns, no matter what season or what time, if they're there. But for everybody else, especially for dramas, I don't think that that's holds true at all. I think that he's right that's dead. I mean, when is the last time you've heard anybody say, you know, I went back and, I mean, you have the outliers is, yeah, I went back and I watched The Wire for a second time. Okay, whatever. Studious, you know, show off that you are. Go ahead.
Teacher's
do that.
Pet.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Teacher's pet. But most people are not doing that. Or most people aren't saying, oh, I dropped in on a drama I've seen before just to like it again. People are not doing that.
So I think, I mean, you're coming at something here where you've got the comedies are more rewatchable, and I think that's true. And I think that is why, I think it's also true that, you know, most shows didn't have the cult of the infinite really rewatchable. It was always a select few that would really draw people's attention. And I think that still exists. And I'll tell you that because my daughter, a junior in high school, she has watched The Office like 10 times all the way through, at least. And I think Parks and Rec she's done two or three times. And she finds other shows that she likes. Has she rewatched Brooklyn Nine-Nine? She probably will at some point. Mm-hmm. But the shows that she really loves, she will rewatch. And they are generally comedies and not dramas. That is absolutely true. But like, in this era, are there shows that will be produced that will be rewatched and be cult rewatching? People know every little bit of it. I think there are. I think it will continue to be a very small number. I think you make a really good point that maybe it's going to be almost entirely comedies instead of dramas, but it, you know, not necessarily. I feel like you will, you, they will still be rare, and they will be because people love them and want them. But I, you know, they won't be accidental. Like you won't watch Star Trek over and over again. As a kid, you might've watched Star Trek every day because it was on and you might've loved it or you might not, but you watched it. Now, if you don't love it, there's something else to watch. But if you love it, you'll still rewatch it. Cause, and I look at my daughter and I see that. She loves it and she rewatches The Office. And that's a perfect example. And I have other friends who are the same way, who've seen, who've watched The Office multiple times. And just as one example, Parks and Rec is another really good example. I think The Good Place might be like that. I know a bunch of people who've rewatched The Good Place. But it's funny. It is the comedies, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there. I think the time that when people used to always rewatch Law and Order. Constantly. And I don't think they're, I mean, I can't imagine that they're doing that anymore. If they are, I don't know those people. And I certainly don't even anecdotally in somewhere in the zeitgeist of,
well, it was always on, right?
It was always on. Yeah. But now everything is always on. So yeah. I think that instead, I think people who like TV are going to say, well, do I really want to watch something I've watched? This would be my third time watching this particular series of this year and this episode. Or do I, hey, why don't I finally look at one of these power ranking best dramas that keeps getting touted or some other such thing? And no one's really watching Friends anymore. So that's, you know, those things die out. You Seinfeld, people are not watching that anymore.
I got to tell you, my daughter is watching Friends. My daughter
is
and her
really?
My daughter and her friends. It is a thing. The Friends had a resurgence with the teens.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. See, there you go. Trend alert. I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they. I keep trying to get my daughter to watch Seinfeld. I don't think she wants to watch Seinfeld. I think it's a little bit too prickly for her. Whereas Friends like goes down easy because it's, you know, it is. It's a joke machine and everybody's, they're friends, right? Whereas the people in Seinfeld are awful.
They're
people.
Not friends. Yeah. They're not. People.
They're awful people. All right. Well, if you would like your letter read on TV Talk Machine, not next week, but the week after, because Tim will be in Austin, Texas next week, and I'll be in San Jose, California, you can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com, or you can tweet at us at TVTM, because Twitter lets you write long tweets now. So there's plenty of room for you to write your tweets. So, Tim, I will catch up with you in 2 weeks. Have a good time in Austin. I was just there, too. It is great. It is an awesome place.
Looking forward to it, and I'm going to stay indoors because it's going to be a heat wave, and I will see, or we will see or hear everybody else in a couple of weeks.
Yes, absolutely. Bye, everybody.
Bye.